Hi, everyone. Welcome to Season 5 of The J Word, a podcast by Journalism and Practice. In each episode, we connect practice and theory through critical discussions of technology, news practices, and cultural and social issues. Our aim is to highlight the work that appears in the journal, making the articles discussed here free access for a short time. I'm your host, Ted Gucci, an associate editor at Journalism and Practice, associate professor at Lancaster University in the UK, and a visiting professor at Vytautas Magnus University in Lithuania. So glad you could join us. Let's get started. It's almost impossible to separate today's journalism from technology. In this episode, we hear from Sadia Jamil, incoming faculty at the School of International Communications at the University of Nottingham, China, who gives us an update on all things journalism and AI. Specifically, she discusses her recent article from Journalism Practice related to evolving newsrooms and a second level of the digital divide in Pakistan. Our second guest, Scott Brennan, shares with us his thoughts on how journalists are dealing with new digital opportunities and divides in his co-authored piece that looks at journalistic approaches to new tech in the UK. At the time of the study he discusses, he was at the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism and the Oxford Internet Institute, both at the University of Oxford in the UK. These interviews were recorded separately. You can find their articles in the episode description. This episode is once again returning to something that you and I talked about earlier on when this podcast started, AI in newsrooms. Because you are such a global and prolific scholar, if you could give us a global sort of idea of AI, which is hard because one of the things you're talking about here is also some of the divides in terms of maybe access, but certainly understanding in terms of global north and global south. And we'll certainly get to that point because it's very important. But if we were to kind of have some sort of general thought about where we are now in 2022 with AI in newsrooms, what are some of the things we should be thinking about before we start to narrow in on some of the different and specifics of how AI is being used?
Thank you, Ted. I'm very grateful for you to have me in this podcast episode. So we have talked about the transformative power of AI earlier in one of the seasons of J Podcast. But what I feel is that before we envisage the use of AI in any newsroom or any media landscape, we need to think about the starting point in terms of where any specific news media ecology stands in terms of technological transformation. And that means to have a look the technological advancement of that specific country or context and the overall ICT development. So it is just going beyond having AI technology. So in terms of when we think about the technology and the proliferation of ICT in different contexts, we have seen that the ICT itself has transformed the notion of mass communication and technological developments, including the diffusion of AI technology, has transformed the way news media ecology is operated in different parts of the world. And we can see that that transformative power of technology and artificial intelligence has diffused itself with varying levels in the global north and the global south. So if we precisely see how technology and specifically AI technology has change journalistic practice. So we see three different distinct aspects. The first aspect is related to the transformation in news production and dissemination process. So AI does have a role in news production, data filtration, data breaking, and then how it is disseminated to the end user. And then we see it does have an impact on the required digital skill of the journalist. Because now we are living in a digital world. We need to have certain level of competency to survive, to meet the requirements of the digital journalism world. And another aspect that has transformed because of the technology and AI is the prevalent situation of traditional media. So we are no more living in a world which is characterized by traditional journalistic practice. It has transformed and altered in many ways. So change is the first word that comes into our mind when we think about AI. And today in 2022, we need to understand that digital competency matter for journalists. It is unavoidable. And that debt is something that is a requirement not only in the case of Pakistan or any evolving news ecology, but that is required everywhere. But the matter of concern is why we need to emphasize the digital competency of journalists in countries like Pakistan, because we need to see where technologically these countries stand. So we need to see the technological, economic, and political context of the country. And we look at it, so we see that the countries like Pakistan or the neighboring countries in South Asia and in many other parts of the global South, we see that it is not just the issue of using AI technology in the newsroom. It is much beyond that. We need to see how these countries have ICT infrastructure developed over the years, whether these countries have addressed the issue of digital inequalities or what we call as digital divide. And then we are able actually to understand how we can transform newsroom as AI-enabled newsrooms or technologically driven newsrooms. So the starting point of my research back to Pakistan was the increasing digital divide and digital inequalities of the country. If you look back at the statistic of Pakistan, the country falls in the last quartile of inclusive internet index. So that means that Pakistan has not shown progress in terms of addressing its digital inequalities in terms of access to internet and the people's capability to use it. So that's a broader societal problem. And it does define how news media operates within the context of Pakistan. So most of the research that has been done into digital divide, it has focused on the quantitative measures of gauging how countries are witnessing digital inequalities. So there are different kinds of factors, different kinds of variables that tell us people's capacity to access and use the internet. For example, age, gender, profession. These are some of the factors that are used as a quantitative measure of assessing digital inequalities. In journalism, many of the scholars there have paid attention on how qualitative research methods can be used to understand journalists' digital competency. And when we say journalists' digital competency, we do need a framework to understand that. So what exactly is meant by digital competency? So in my research, I came up with a framework that's a conceptual framework, of course, an adopted framework around four types of digital skills that journalists require. For example, operational skills, whether they are capable to operate efficiently digital technologies that not only include internet or digital tools, but also AI-enabled softwares. Then there are formal skills, whether they are able to handle the structure of the devices where information is stored. For example, any AI-enabled software to store the data, or cloud computing, or any hardwares or softwares that are used to save the data. So whether they are able to use that or not. And then the information skill, whether they are able to effectively browse the information using different digital tools. And the fourth type of a skill are the strategic skills that we define whether journalists are able to use the technology for their professional and personal development. That is more linked to the third level of digital divide. But still, when we gauge journalists' digital competency, we use these four kinds of skills. So that's a brief enough. So that was a motivation to apply this framework, whether Pakistani journalists have those four types of digital skills. And that was not just enough to develop a framework. Now, how to apply that framework? So I picked different kinds of variables, for example, age, gender, type of news organization. So when we say gender, it was quite significant to compute the data, whether male and female journalists have different types of digital competency level. and then type of news organization. For example, in Pakistan, traditional media is largely characterized by Urdu and English language newspapers and television news channels that actually solely operate in Urdu language. So that was the mainstream data collection sample. And then I applied that theoretical framework to gauge digital competency of journalists. And what we found that digital competency across those four sets of skills do vary depending on the gender and the type of media organizations. For example, male journalists either operating in the newspapers or television news channels, they were having more competency in terms of operational, formal, or informational skills, and even strategic skills because they were regularly trained. But female journalists, they were found as having lacking required digital competency. And one of the main reasons that was found is that in terms of the quota of journalist training, for example, it was found that most of the journalist training that comes into newspapers and television news channels, they were more open to male journalists. And there was a very few representatives of female journalists, either from newspapers and television news channels. Well, we can think that that could be a gender bias or gender discrimination that this is still prevalent in Pakistani news media. But I think that is the reason. So we cannot blame that female journalists are not motivated themselves to acquire digital competency. Of course, we cannot blame them. And we definitely need to have more research why they are lacking digital skills as compared to their male colleagues. What are the motivations? What are the reasons?
We're going to be hearing later in this episode from Scott, who's going to be talking about tech journalism and some of the same sort of issues, how technology has been diffused and used innovatively and how people are thinking about it. As you go through the rest of these thoughts here, how also journalism is or should or isn't changing in Pakistan from a tenet perspective, from standards perspective, in addition to maybe how the information is collected and distributed.
I think it's a very relevant point, Ted, because if you think about in terms of standards, that is really relevant, because if you envisage journalism moving from traditional journalistic practice to a more technologically driven practice, we need to look back what sort of standards, you know, technology-driven standards we are using. And when we think about standards, it could be the normative standard, that could be a professional standard in terms of practice. So that is a concept that is quite inclusive. It does not only require technological resources or capital or journalist trainings or gender representation, rather to rethink how journalists operate or journalism as a profession is driven by technology. So if the infrastructure of newsroom is changing, if the pattern of news production or distribution is changing, we need to think back. The basic tenets of journalism needs to think back, and that is the status quo in Pakistan. Now, if you go back and pick up the policy documents in most of the news organizations, I'm talking about mainstream news organizations, maybe these tenets are not on paper, journalistic standards that we are talking about. And if there is something on paper, maybe it would have been drafted in back to 90s or 2000, and that is the same case with the journalist unions. So my point is that it is not just enough to think about to have a standard, but rather we need to go back and think who is going to draft that standard. Now, don't you think, Ted, this is something relevant? Training by whom? Policy by whom? Drafting by whom? So we need to think. We need to see who is developing that standard. Because once you develop a professional tenant, for example, that meet the requirement of AI-driven newsroom, we need to think back, who is actually drafting it? Is that agent or agency is competent enough to bring up professional standard that can meet not only local journalistic requirement, but also the global requirements of journalistic practice. So for me, having a standard is not just important.
And I do wonder if in that rethinking or reconsidering of these dimensions that you're talking about, if that changes for seeing issues of gender and power and access and literacy, does that then maybe alter how we consider democracy and journalists' roles in democracy, what that democracy looks like? Can that sort of internal discussion about journalistic practice influence that actual practice if one of those is to further some sort of democracy?
Yeah, I agree with your point, because journalism as an institution does operate in a political context. So everything, you know, get translated into practice. So if democracy is a negotiated concept and it redefines itself, for example, the concept of democracy, which is prevalent in the United States or UK or in Australia, is not definitely the one which is prevalent in Pakistan or even in the neighboring country, India, for example. So if you claim that you are democratic and still you redefine the concept of democracy as per the local needs and, you know, as per the power structure of the country, that becomes problematic. I would say not problematic, but rather more complicated for journalists. And in that way, having any professional standard or tenant or to develop any regulatory framework that defines the standard, you know, that becomes problematic. I think I contributed one of the research articles to journalism practice that talks about the ethical and legal issues related to the use of AI within the context of Pakistan. And the paper does talk about the ethical and legal dilemmas. For example, if you look back, Pakistan has very stringent national security laws. We have blasphemy laws. Then we have criminal libel laws. And these are one of the stringent laws, you know, if you compare with rest of the world. So if you have to operate in an AI-driven world, how journalists, Pakistani journalists, for example, they are going to respond back these legal and ethical dilemmas, and that is all linked back to the political context within which they operate. So all alone, it is not their agency to define the standard or tenet. It is, I think, beyond their control, because it's like a trickle-down effect. It comes from those who are in power, how they view democracy and how they view the regulatory and ethical standards within which a journalist can operate. And given that we are now living in a digital world, we need a regulatory and ethical standards that meet digital world's requirement. We cannot use a traditional code of conduct that we used to have maybe 20 years back, because now it is we are living in an online world. So the freedom of expression, freedom of information, it all has changed. The requirement has changed as we operate in an online world. So I think I agree with your point that much is related, the agency and the structure, it is all linked with the broader context, the political context. And the way we define democracy, it does have an impact the way we see and envisage standards and how it is implemented, I would say.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. And I was actually thinking it might also be an aspect of a trickle-up sort of effect, that if we reconsider our organizations and our internal standards to see that there are these divides that exist within use of AI, that we can overcome them, that perhaps then that changes the way we construct our narratives or do our reporting, ask the questions to also meet any sort of changes that might be coming from above, from kind of that sort of practice and the rhetoric and the type of data, how we interpret data, how it feeds into our storytelling, that can also be a powerful motivation for change. Just before we get to Scott here, I'm wondering, what is the kind of the last sort of takeaway that you want to plant?
I think one thing that I was inspired to further investigate was when we talk about digital competency of journalists, we take a basic framework and then, you know, we apply that framework on journalists and then we gauge their capacity to work. But what is important, we need to think about the context within which they operate. For example, we talked about democracy, but we really need to think about, like, what sort of restriction do they encounter? For example, if they work in an environment where they are constantly monitored or they face surveillance, for example. So their motivation to use AI technology and rather, I would say, the fear that is prevalent in them in terms of technology, that needs to be addressed. What exactly they think about the use of technology? How do they perceive it? And that is something that I feel that needs further qualitative investigation. Because when I was speaking to journalists back to Pakistan, they do have a fear as if like it is something that may harm them. You know, they are not even aware about what sort of digital safety risk they may encounter in an AI-driven world. So there is a lack of awareness, there is a lack of dialogue, and there is a lack of policy. And all these things, they are not actually investigated in detail. So for example, when I did this research, that was quite basic for me to apply a framework and to gauge some basic competency level. But this is much beyond that. How do they perceive technology? How do they address different kinds of issues that they may perceive? Are they open to take up the challenge or new opportunities that are informed by AI technology to transform journalistic practice? These are the things that are not being debated in Pakistan. And okay, I should not claim that it is not happening in other parts of the world, but I think most of the developing countries, they struggle with their economic and political crisis this much that these kind of issues are not debated. Most of the time, restrictions coming from the national governments or different sort of agencies, they are debated. But the competency of journalists is not just restrained because of the restriction that is coming from the power holder. It is much restrained because they don't talk about how they perceive technology, how they perceive technology-related dilemmas, and how they are going to respond to that. So if they don't have awareness, if they don't talk about that, they are not able to respond back. And that will ultimately affect their agency.
Well, we know that journalists don't just use technology, but they also cover technology. And it's that intertwine, that connection between the interjection of technology into journalism and journalistic narratives about that technology, and of course those corporations, that's at the center of some of what Scott Brennan's going to be talking about now. This is a paper that was published, but was based on a study from a few years ago. And the really interesting thing here, Scott, is that we get to take a bit of a step back and look at what might have changed since the study first appeared online. Essentially, the question that's being asked here is, how are journalists covering tech companies, and what does that mean for journalism? But maybe you can kind of take us a step back here to when you started this project.
When I did the research for this, I was doing a postdoc at Oxford, working mainly with the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism, but also spending time over at the Oxford Internet Institute. I was actually working on a project called the Oxford Martin Program on Misinformation Science and Media. And it was kind of primarily geared towards understanding misinformation about science and technology. I was there when COVID hit. And so that ended up taking over like a lot of my work towards the end. But in the beginning part of my postdoc, I think, you know, I was really interested in the PIs I was working with, which was my two co-authors on this paper, Phil Howard and Rasmus Nielsen, were all kind of interested in thinking about misinformation a little bit differently, or looking into the areas of misinformation that don't often kind of get covered enough. And so through this wandering path, like, led me to be very curious about tech journalism, which, you know, I think I had observed was this kind of growing beat, and yet had received just kind of like no attention or minimal attention in journalism studies. And so, yeah, this project kind of, you know, I interviewed a series of tech journalists in the UK from a range of different outlets. And I really just sort of wanted to better understand what you know, contemporary tech journalism looked like, at the time, how it was changing, what they were focusing on, what the day-to-day practices consisted of. So that was kind of what the paper grew out of. And I'll just say, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a bit more, you know, since I left Oxford, I wouldn't say that I've left academia, because I'm still at UNC, but I guess my focus has really shifted from doing academic research, well, at least at Oxford, the academic research that was sort of interested in policy, to now doing sort of policy research that's interested in academics, I guess. And so I'm, you know, I think my work since my postdoc has given me this like very different sort of perspective on tech journalism, and that's especially as it concerns, you know, covering and writing about tech policy. So yeah, I'd be happy to talk more about, you know, going back and looking at this piece of scholarship, how I'm thinking about that differently now.
One of the things that happens a lot in our research and in our practice is we talk about these different journalisms with an adjective or something in front of them, and I'm wondering if it would be helpful to define what we mean by tech journalism. I think for some that might be really clear, but how do you know tech journalism when you see it?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's actually is a sort of a chunk of this paper, the challenge of defining it, and I think that kind of, you know, is one of the main stories that the paper tells, which is of the shift in physically what tech journalism is, right? Like, you know, 20 years ago, tech journalism was mostly a sort of, was about like consumer tech products. And so it would be, reviews of new widgets, news about the, you know, new tech happenings. After that, like, you know, there began to be kind of a more coverage of the business of technology, especially as, right, like some of the most, some of the largest and kind of most influential, you know, businesses were, you know, in the tech space. And then the paper kind of charts how more recently there's been this shift towards, something they call like journalism that looks at the social or political implications of technology. I think now where I'd write this paper, I might frame that more as about tech policy. And I think that's, I was trying to get at that, you know, with the sort of political implications of tech, but I think that's what really defines tech journalism today. Certainly the kind of most impactful type of tech journalism, which is, really focusing on the impacts that it's actually usually information technology, has on us and the sort of options that we have for improving it or for holding it to account.
That spurred a couple of questions. It's always unfair to kind of ask these two questions at once. But as you are outlining kind of these aspects or schools and routine practices of tech journalism that you found at that time, I'm wondering, can you kind of also give us a bit of an update? If you found a particular idea, because you did these interviews, and it's always great to talk with journalists and have that turn into scholarship. Before we started this recording, you mentioned you were even doing some of that again this morning. And so can you kind of give us a bit of a then and now on what these different schools of thought might be?
I guess before answering that, I should preface it that in that my role has changed, I think the way that I now interact with tech journalists has changed. And so my perspective has really changed as well. I mean, now, you know, I think I mentioned I spoke to a tech journalist this morning. It was not to interview them for a piece of research, but they were interviewing me about a piece of research I did. And so I've interacted a lot more with them as the sort of like subject of tech reporting rather than just doing, you know, interviews about their work. But I think, you know, to get to the question of like how it's changed, I mean, I think, you know, when I did these interviews, which was mostly, I want to say, around 2019, you know, there had already been this kind of, kind of new interest in topics like misinformation and artificial intelligence. But it was still kind of new a bit. And I think I kind of captured this moment when a lot of reporters who had been previously working on the consumer tech beat were like getting more interested in these bigger picture questions about the social or political implications of technology, or again on these like questions about tech policy. And you know, I remember talking to journalists who like were trying to do both. And I think at one point in the paper I talk about how I talk about like some of the kind of like constraints and challenges that reporters face. And a lot ended up talking about like, you know, especially at you know, digital, certain digital outlets, you know, a lot of pressure to hit their click targets. But they, you know, I remember them, several talking about, you know, turning to certain types of stories, which were all about consumer tech, in order to generate clicks, to sort of almost like store up, you know, good metrics so they could write about things that they were actually interested in, which is a kind of bizarre situation. Whereas like it's like they could write these, you know, stories about the iPhone in order to, you know, to appease their editors, and then, write the stories about, you know, about the things that they actually cared about that might not receive so many clicks. I think since then my sense is that third school has really kind of developed far more, and there are now, you know, many journalists across publications doing just phenomenal work, kind of in that realm. They're really asking good questions about the bigger pictures about tech. And not to drone on, but, and I think the other big way that I think my thinking has sort of changed on this, the paper is ultimately interested in capture, like media capture. I don't use that language, but I think going in, that's what I was really interested in, and what really came out of this, which was, how tech journalists are, influenced by the tech industry and the interconnections between tech journalism and the tech industry. And in the paper, I end up arguing that all three, basically, of these different schools of tech journalism or definition of tech journalism are like deeply kind of enfolded in the tech industry. But also, you know, looking at some of the main pressures constraints on reporters, the tech industry is persistent and powerful. And not that I would say that my sense of that has changed. I think if anything, like tech journalism has become almost synonymous with like, you know, covering the tech industry. But I do think that the way that sort of influence is manifested is maybe more complex than I believed. And I didn't actually get into this in the paper, but, you know, I think now it becomes clear that like, while tech journalists are still like very focused on tech companies, the tech industry, the products of tech industry, that doesn't necessarily manifest in any sort of like, like valence coverage, right? Like there are many journalists who almost exclusively write like very critical stories. So certainly like the way that plays out is not simple. I do think, and I've actually written about this in other work, that I think the kind of more interesting thing though about the manifestations of that deep tech influence, the industry influence, is the way that sort of aside from like, is it pro industry or anti industry coverage, there's just this way that you know, tech journalism remains just like deeply caught up in tech journalism, I remember thinking about this when I was writing the paper, and I haven't really followed it up, but I'd love to sort of try to like spend more time trying to just imagine what a tech journalism would look like that wasn't so geared towards industry. It's frankly, it's hard to do. It's hard to sort of imagine like what the sort of stories someone would write that are not so enfolded in the tech industry.
That same question can be asked about politics, about police, about military, about Hollywood, right? And it seems that, you know, journalism as a social construction, of course, just seems to not have its kind of own identity, right? It's shaped by all of these different pressures, which you write about here, but others, obviously, we're aware of. It just doesn't seem to have sometimes its own way of functioning if it's not for these PR influences and the push toward metrics that's coming from the same sort of tech companies that they're covering. One interesting sort of quote here from one of the participants said that there's so much PR, right? It's just overload, they say. There's way too much. There's a tidal wave of PR from companies, which is 99% crap. A quote from the participant. One of my questions is, if they're realizing this, you know, can we cull some sort of meanings about how maybe not just in this area of coverage, but maybe in others, how much work it is still for journalists to sift through what an actual story is?
That's a series of really good questions that I feel like there are better people to answer than me. I guess my first reaction would be that I'm not sure that, you know, tech journalism itself is like, you know, has any sort of like significant impact on, like, you know, the you know, how journalists are reconceptualizing like their own work. But I think that some of the pressures in structural constraints that I discuss in the paper, which have been like well covered and discussed by many, many others, you know, continue to be, you know, hugely important in the work that journalists can do now. I mean, you know, there is, you know, a series of profound crises that, you know, facing journalists and, you know, offering like incredibly significant limitations on what they can do. I like how you framed that as far as the job is, you know, journalists is increasingly a sort of like sifting through of information overload to find out what the story is. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I also talk about how for a lot of digital journalists, in tech, and I think this is true elsewhere. I saw this when I was doing my dissertation research in science journalism as well, that the journalists who work for, you know, maybe lower prestige digital outlets, you know, might be responsible for publishing, you know, half a dozen stories a day. And what they do there is, you know, just rehash or rewrite, you know, press releases all day. Or other news outlets' content, so you know, I really think that like the you know these really significant kind of pressures that journalists are facing that, you know, amid, you know, profound economic disruption, are incredibly influential.
Another unfair question of what's not talked about here and not in any fault at all. But I think if we go back to the conversations about misinformation, disinformation, media trust, all those different things, that was very live and well, certainly in 2019 and 2020 when this came out. And again, we should say that this is a UK-focused and based piece. So for listeners, at the same time, a lot of mis and disinformation and trust that might be talked about in journalism coming from a North American or certainly a US perspective had to do about the Donald Trump administration and election. But here in the UK, it seems a lot of it was revolving around issues of Brexit, the removal of Britain from the European Union, among other things, where media trust and mis and disinformation might have also been existing. And I think one of the questions was, at least in a U.S. context, there was from the right a lot of question about big tech, right? The influence of big tech, Silicon Valley, and at the same time, mis and distrust of mainstream media. But certainly, mainstream media is in of itself a part of that tech industry. They use others' proprietary platforms and systems and softwares, gathering data, analyzing data, and then certainly distributing it out and about. Do you see any sort of connection at all between issues of media trust from that time period and or the way tech journalists or other journalists even might be able to cover or talk about their industry's own connections, reliance upon tech?
Yeah, quite a great deal. Yeah, I mean, certainly the relationship between, you know, mainstream news outlets and tech companies, are really asking about like tech platforms, is a very complicated one. And while, you know, some might say that in some ways, you know, news outlets are really dependent on the platforms for distribution, I think the opposite, the other side of that is certainly as far as things like advertising, that the platforms have been responsible for financially harming news outlets as well, even as they, right, like, are the platforms are making use of news content. So certainly that is a complicated relationship. I think the other side, you know, you're absolutely right to point out that, you know, in the U.S. at least, the right has really, embraced a critique of big tech that has continued and if anything only intensified in the past few years. I've done a lot of work recently on state tech policy efforts and especially around content. And in 2021, there were a raft of these bills introduced in states, in many states, dozens and dozens of states, which were all essentially the same bill, but that were trying to prohibit platforms from basically moderating content or user content or directly limiting it. And so I think the right has really sort of centered this critique of big tech, and they do that kind of along with this. You're absolutely right to point out like a similar critique of mainstream news or other kind of major institutions. So, as we're seeing that with education or whatnot. And so, at the same time, I think what the interesting place we are with tech is that it's not like the party lines are clearly drawn as it relates to big tech, right? Like some on the left are also pursuing pretty strong critiques of big tech companies. And I think in some of the big antitrust actions have been pursued by those on the left, like Klobuchar's bill. And also we're seeing a lot of kind of push from the left as far as sort of trying to compel platforms to do more as it concerns false or hateful content. So this brings us to this like really weird situation where there actually almost is consensus across the parties in the US that there's something wrong with big tech. The problem is there's no consensus as far as like what the problem actually is, which means that there's probably not going to be a whole lot of action.
No, but I think for any tech journalists, people interested in that, people studying that, I'm going to turn to what is not low-hanging fruit, the last paragraph of the conclusion. I find often conclusions as fun as a Supreme Court dissent. That's where a lot of the juice is. And I like how you all say, we now ask much of technology journalists. You recognize that they review latest gadgets and help us sort out what we buy. Maybe they tell us what to buy, and maybe they tell us what not to buy, right? But you also talk about how they help put our social worlds into some sort of meaning. And you get to some of the ideas that this is inherently based in some sort of power, right? I mean, this is power of explanation and interpretation. And I think you identify that when you say that you ask that tech journalists hold companies to account, uncover malfeasance, speak for the confused, marginalized, or exploited publics. Is that going to happen? How do you think that is going to happen? And how can we take some of these ideas to another level for those who kind of want to change tech journalism, do stories differently, or research it in a different way?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. now. We've seen some great examples of this. I mean, I'm thinking about like the Uber, you know, the reporting on the Uber documents that came from a whistleblower. You know, I think, you know, a lot of the sort of best report, you know, some of the best reporting in this area, like, comes from whistleblowers within tech, which is itself a sort of kind of important data point about, like, you know, the what's required to have the sort of good reporting that we want to see. I mean, I think my, you know, the concern in writing the paper was that, you know, in this way that tech journalists are just like deeply entangled with tech industry, that it might limit this, like that it might limit, like, in these different ways we're talking about, like, limit the ability to hold tech companies to account. I don't know. I mean, there are certainly new reasons to be concerned about that. I mean, you know, much has been made about Jeff Bezos now owning the Washington Post. You know, having spoken to a lot of Washington Post reporters who, you know, I think would argue strongly that they have no right, like, that the fact that Jeff Bezos owns the Post has absolutely no kind of meaningful influence on their day-to-day life. I think we can question that, like, the sort of, like, what goes unsaid in a newsroom, you know, can often be incredibly impactful. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm a bit ambivalent here, that, like, you know, we certainly see positive examples of tech companies, like, doing this, or excuse me, tech journalists doing the sort of reporting that we'd like to see, but also there continue to be, you know, significant kind of headwinds to them doing that sort of work. I wish I were better able to sort of, you know, predict how that's going to look as we move forward, but you know, I can't. So,
well, there really have been a lot of great questions, answers, and even some prediction, I think, embedded in our conversations today. And I thank all of our guests for joining us, and I thank you for listening. We hope you tune in again for our future episodes of The J Word. All articles discussed during the episode can be found by searching online for Journalism Practice, and you can follow and connect with us on Twitter at JournPractice, or send any feedback about this podcast to jwordpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.